Welcome to You Totally Made That Up. We are a bi-weekly history podcast that tells you the wildest, craziest, nuttiest stories from yesteryear, ones that sound like somebody must have totally made them up. But they're all true, and we especially like the ones that have supernatural, paranormal, woo-woo elements, so those parts may only be true to the people who live them. We don't go for the lore says or the legend goes, though. We want dates and names and all the facts that we can find. Basically, we like the weirdest stuff that we can find. And I'm Nash.
I'm Tiff.
And we are your hosts. This is a special episode, as you have likely guessed from the title. It is our second anniversary, and so it is a collection of clips from some of our favorite moments from over the past year.
And like we said for last year's first anniversary compilation, if you're new or if you're trying to get a friend listening, that episode or this one is probably a great way to get new people to get to know us.
And keep listening. After the episode is over, there's going to be an outro that tells you how to get in touch with us because we love hearing from you.
All right, let's get this started.
And as always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy. As it turned out, as time passed, they found out that he was able to say something, his name, which was Pedro Gonzalez. The physicians reported back their assessment, which was that this was a normal child, minus the hairiness, and that he was just really shy and scared. So King Henri decided that this was going to be a project. He wanted to see if he could basically culture Pedro up. To start, he was renamed something the king thought sounded more regal, and from that point on, he was known as Petrus Gonsalves.
So they're basically giving him a makeover.
They're absolutely, this is extreme makeover werewolf edition. I guess.
I'm just imagining the montage, you know, changing clothes, posing.
The curtains open. He's in a new outfit.
Yep.
His hair's done. Actually, in like in Beauty and the Beast, you know, when they're fluffing him up and sometimes he's got bows in his hair and sometimes he's... That's exactly it. Yeah.
Margarita came from a noble family and they owned several mines in the area. Now, unfortunately, many of the openings in the tunnels for these mines were so small that only children could work in them.
But, okay, I have to go back to the mine.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I don't, because it was a stupid comment that I was about to make. Well, it wasn't so stupid. Look, it was worked out in my head. And then as soon as it came, it went. It was something about whistling while they worked.
Well, there's mines in the second part, too. You can always wedge it in there.
Okay, well, and if my brain fart dissipates, maybe the joke will come back. I feel like it was a good one. I really do. Okay. I feel like it was a real zinger, but carry on.
Okay. Another interesting fact about her story that combines with Margareta's is that there are mining hills in their region. And the miners, again, were children because of the small passages. Now, the children in these mines also wore bright caps, so that they could be found easier in case of collapse. So, I mean, if everybody's thinking like I am this whole time to the Disney version of Snow White that we all know about, all of the dwarves have their different colored hats that they wore through the mines, the dwarves, the children, you know, you kind of see how things go there. And a lot of these children, because they were climbing in and out of these holes, ended up with a lot of deformities and inhibited growth. So they ended up all remaining pretty small through their relatively short lives. Did that joke ever come back to you?
No. And especially after you talked about deformed mining children, I feel like it's...
You're going to hold off?
It's inappropriate, whatever it was. I'm going to file it under. That was a good thing that I dodged a bullet.
There was also evidence that the castle had been used to shoot pornography. So, you know, it's really gone from... I kind of wonder what some of those videos would be like. Are they cashing in on the haunted theme? Or are they just ignoring it and going someplace else with it? I don't know. If somebody knows, don't tell me. I don't care that much.
Porn castle. Porn castle. The porn castle of Ohio. Nice.
Right. That's Franklin Castle. And I wanna go there. Not for the pornography.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, just because there's a lot happening. There's a lot that's going on at this location. And I'm curious.
Oh, I think it's bullshit. The porn part, I believe, of all that you just said.
That's the most believable part?
Yeah, it being an abandoned house and people sneaking in and filming porn. That, I believe, that's the most believable thing.
Yeah, you're probably right. But my God, wasn't that a journey?
I mean, we went from dead babies to Judy Garland's husband.
Don't forget the Nazis and the bootleggers.
To Nazis, to Judy, yeah. Oh, man.
If you're going to do like a fun 6 degrees separation game.
That'd be it.
Franklin Castle's got you all set, I think.
Yeah, that's true. If you did a 6 degrees of paranormal separation, just if you could somehow get to Franklin Castle with one of your moves, you'd win every time. Every time.
That's the Kevin Bacon of 6 degrees.
Yep. Yes, it is. Franklin Castle is the Kevin Bacon of paranormal 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think that's it.
With apologies to Kevin Bacon. That tree is what this grandpa is said to have lived in, just peeking out and harassing people. And what exactly was it doing? What were people seeing and hearing? Quote, while there's not much of a written record concerning this unique beast, what has been passed down through the centuries are eyewitness accounts of a strange, wheezing animal that was said to resemble, at least on the surface, a dolphin or a porpoise. While the Grampus was not considered to be a particularly dangerous vermin, it did manage to terrify locals by emitting a disturbing cacophony of guttural noises and, even more alarmingly, chasing anyone, primarily it would seem young women, foolish enough to wander too close to its domicile. What method of locomotion it used to propel itself in these pursuits remains a mystery. Copy that. I'm a bit at a loss for words. I suppose the first thing that I would submit is that it is in desperate need of water and that it is begging these people for water or to be put down. One of the two.
Mm-hmm. All right. So here we go. The Bermuda Triangle, or maybe you want to call it the Devil's Triangle. It's just that mysterious area in the Atlantic Ocean. And you might be thinking, like, Tiff, really, the Bermuda Triangle? Yes, because while everyone has heard of it, when is the last time you actually paid attention to anything about it?
I don't know. I was about to say, the Devil's Triangle sounds like something you would tell your esthetician, like, whoever does the bikini waxes, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
To be like, do you want a Brazilian today? No, I'd like a Devil's Triangle.
It sounds like a dirty sex move. It certainly does.
Is that an Urban Dictionary? Somebody go look that up and let us know, because we're not going to look.
Yeah.
Because we're drinking wine and we're lazy.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. That's the Bermuda Triangle, which is, you know, a very vague triangle.
A very what?
Vague.
Yeah. Vague.
Vague.
A very vague.
A vague.
Now we're back to Vag and that Devil's Triangle wax job that I want to get.
See, it all comes back. Edmund's like, all right, we're going to go over to an island. And there's this island that's about 3 miles or so out of town. He brings the congregation there. And it sounds like it would be a really fun retreat, you know, because they're going to be camping, they're going to be praying, it's going to be really awesome. But in reality, not so much. It's uninhabited. It's really just used for lumber, for harvesting hops. There's a peach orchard, but there's really nothing else on there. There's no structures. There's no houses. So they're hanging out on this island, suffering because it's summer and they have no house and they're only eating peaches because they don't have any supplies with them. And it's awful. And now it's...
And they're only eating peaches. I don't know why that's so funny to me. That is so...
It's ridiculous. I mean, this guy is just so like, God will provide. But really, really, I don't know if he's just going to provide all of this shit for you.
And speaking of shit, that's all you're going to do if peaches is the only thing in your diet.
So maybe it's a good thing the island's uninhabited.
Backing up, let's start with the arrival of the members and their ladies. And I must admit, this entry sounds incredible. They would arrive by boat because it was more sneaky and creepy. And he definitely wanted things to have a creepy vibe. The meetings were always held at night, naturally, and they'd get there via river, as I said earlier, and it was in this huge bright red gondola. They'd get duded up in their white robes that had red-lined hoods and hold candles as they walked to the abbey as a bell rung in the tower and organ music played. Best believe there was an organ, because you can't not have an organ when creepiness is involved, you know?
Yeah, naturally.
At the door, they'd be met by Francis, who would ask them the password, and apparently it was the same thing every time, which was the phrase, "Do what thou wilt," and not terribly secretive, since, as mentioned, that's the engraving above the door. But look, I'm being picky, and I'm being judgy. There are other things to judge. After whoever was playing the abbot of the day got his first pick, everyone would pair or group off, some to different rooms, some out in the garden, but usually a good handful of them would stay in that main room because they wanted to watch each other get it on. And quote, "The members spoke proudly of the amoristic acrobats of some of the women and described the various positions in great detail. Some of them required 3 or 4 people working as a team to perform."
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Like his father, Ben loved to bone. He was a ladies' man. Ladies?
I have heard that.
I had not heard that before I got into all this. Written records are not all we have regarding evidence of the whoring. There is a sketchbook on display at the Museum of the American Philosophical Society as part of their Curious Revolutionaries, the Peels of Philadelphia exhibit by one Charles Wilson Peel, a popular artist. When he was still an unknown, he goes to London to study with another artist in 1767, and quote, "Peel hoped to build his network of connections and possible commissions by calling on other more established Americans also in London. Among those was Benjamin Franklin, already a celebrated diplomat, philosopher, and bon vivant. Like all artists, Peel also carried his sketchbook with him wherever he went, including social calls. I suspect you all may know what's coming. There are 2 sketches of Franklin. The caption reads, "While studying art in London, Charles Wilson Peel called upon Benjamin Franklin uninvited. Peel accidentally witnessed the well-known Franklin engaging in promiscuous behavior with a lady. Instead of leaving, Peel secretly sketched the scandalous scene for future generations."
Ooh.
To paint the proverbial picture for you, or sketch it, as it were, let me be clear that these were not, like, done via this kid peeking through a keyhole or a window or hiding behind a curtain or at a distance. The perspective is straight on and up close. I know the caption says secretly, but poor shit, they knew he was there. They knew he was there.
They put on a show.
And they didn't care. And it's Ben in a chair, and she's perched beside him in one, kinda on his lap in another. They're both fully dressed, by the way. And in the first, she's got her hand on his crotch, and he's got a hand on her boob. Then in the other, his hand's going for her crotch. I don't know what he hoped to accomplish through all the skirts and petticoats or whatever, but maybe he was just that good.
The shark attacks start in Beach Haven, which is just a little bit north of Atlantic City, and Charles Van Sant is out with his dog, and they're out swimming. Now, he starts screaming and thrashing around, but no one's really paying much attention because they're like, oh, he's kidding, that jokester. Or maybe he's just yelling for the dog. But he was not. He was being mauled by a shark.
Hey, that guy's dog, he named it Help Me God, I'm Dying. That seems like a funny name for a dog.
Right? You know? But he's funny that way.
Old Charles.
Charles. Oh, what a prankster.
My leg's been bit off. Come here, boy. The Essex moves on into the Pacific. In late October, they stop at the Galapagos Archipelago. And if you're at all familiar with the Galapagos, some things might be pinging your radar. one of which is likely Darwin and natural selection, and another is likely tortoises. Apparently, tortoises are tasty. So on Hood Island, while they're fixing a leak, they snatch up 200 of these 100-pound boogers because that's easy fresh meat. They don't eat a lot and could live on the ship, and you could cook as you go, no risk of spoiling. I mean, I don't condone, if you don't get your finger bit off, that is, and I don't condone it, but I get it. They then pop over to Charles Island, now known as Floriana, get about 60 more tortoises. And y'all, these are huge. I mean, where are they putting them?
Yeah. It's like an infestation.
I cannot fathom where they're putting them. And how, this is just like 20 guys now. And these are 100-pound animals. They're up to like, what, almost 300 at this point. How much are y'all eating? Like, jeez. Okay. So, tortoises are loaded. Let's head out. Oh, shit. The island's on fire. Why? Well, quote, as a prank, one of the crew set a fire, which, in the dry season, quickly spread. Pollard's men barely escaped, having to run through flames, and a day after they set sail, they could still see smoke from the burning island. Pollard was furious and swore vengeance on whoever set the fire. Many years later, the island was still a blackened wasteland, and the fire was believed to have caused the extinction of both the Floriana tortoise and the Floriana mockingbird.
Oh my God, these guys are such assholes.
They're just,
okay.
It's
like a bunch of frat boys just got on a boat and they're like, yeah, we got this. We'll do it.
Yup. You nailed it. He never finds out who the douche canoe was. So I get, they're loyal. Nobody ever told, I guess.
Snitches get stitches and thrown off the boat, probably. Oh my God.
They've not seen what's happened. They're just chit-chatting, and the steering guys are glancing up periodically, of course, so they can make sure they're still headed the right way. And on this glance, one of the steerers announces that the Essex is gone, baby, gone. All they know is that in one moment the ship was there on the horizon, and now it ain't. Pollard is like, let these whales loose, screw it, we're booking it. As they approach, they slow down, and the rowing gradually halts, everybody just jaw-dropped and staring, seeing Chase and the boys in a whale boat sitting there in silence, and right in time to see the Essex collapse in on itself and go upside down. End quote. Pollard stood at the steering oar, staring at the capsized hulk that had once been his formidable command, unable to speak. He dropped down onto the seat, so overcome with astonishment, dread, and confusion that they could scarcely recognize his countenance. Finally, Pollard asked, Mr. Chase, what is the matter? Chase replied, oh my snappy God, we done been railed by a whale.
Oh, please let that be a quote.
No, it's not. He said we had been stowed by a whale. Listen, I understand how these stories can get sometimes, and I have to make sure y'all are awake and paying attention. What if he did? Just, oh my snappy God. Lastly, we also know that Mary was familiar with Philip von Hohenheim, better known as Paracelsus. I guess it's just like Cher or Madonna. He just seemed to need the one name, like he was that cool. So his claim to fame was that he said he, quote, developed a homunculus, or little man, from semen alone.
Congratulations.
I had questions. The number one being, who's semen? I assume his, but he doesn't mention it in his instructions, which, you best believe, I'm going to read for you right now, in case you have some sperm lying about and want to make your own. Let the semen of a man putrefy by itself in a sealed glass container with the highest putrefaction of venter equinus, that's horse uterus, for 40 days.
Cool.
It becomes thenceforward a true living infant, but much smaller. It should afterwards then be educated with the greatest care and zeal until it grows up and starts to display intelligence.
He is full of so much shit. Just jerk off into a horse uterus in a jar. You're good.
Yeah, go kill a horse.
So simple.
It's so gross.
I don't like him.
Oh, I hate him. I hate him and his semen. I hate him.
I took a class. It was all about serial killers and how they're presented. we read Interview with the Vampire, and then we had this interesting discussion about whether or not you would consider a vampire a serial killer.
And I said no, because I consider them, okay, let's everybody take off our logic hats. Let's just pretend vampires are real. My thing was that they are a separate species from human, much like, you know, Neanderthal. Are they human-like? Yes, but they're not Homo sapien. It's more like a prey situation, predator-prey.
Mm-hmm.
It's like calling a lion a serial killer of gazelles.
Yeah, I could see that.
If they ain't gazelling fast enough, they're going to get eaten. And going back to one of the myths that we keep talking about is feet. I hate feet, by the way. I hate my feet. I hate your feet. I hate their feet. I hate everybody's feet. I hate feet. So this is just, bleh. This whole thing is...
So do I.
It's so gross to me.
So gross. Yeah.
Oh. So going back to that myth about him being barefoot, he actually wasn't all the time. He did wear shoes. And one of my sources said that he had, on several occasions, given his shoes to someone in a family who needed them. And I thought that this was funny. Quote, "Of course, this wasn't the sacrifice it might have been for another person. Chapman's feet were allegedly so tough that he could stick needles into his soles without any ill effects, a trick he used to entertain children."
Oh, that's gross. No.
We've reached a new level of gross. So yeah, that's the guy crashing on your sofa, wearing a pot on his head and talking about the Lord and sticking needles into his feet. But you got some seeds out of it. Yay!
As far as the ghosts that are actually haunting the place, I couldn't really find many stories. You know, people go there and you're welcome to take pictures. The staff will not confirm or deny anything that you find in the photos, partially because they just don't have the time to look at everybody's pictures to say, oh yeah, that's totally a ghost. But also because, come on. But one ghost that apparently a lot of people have seen and come into contact with is Clyde, the wheelbarrow ghost, who is kind of benign. He just wanders around pushing the wheelbarrow. And no one can really place where he might be from. If he's a construction worker who died on the site, there's no evidence of that. And, you know, if he was killed by a rifle, he doesn't seem like he's too pissed off about it.
Clyde.
Clyde.
Here's my thing. I have to criticize this plot line. I mean, who invented Clyde? I understand the creepy groundskeeper angle, but give him a pair of rusty hedge clippers or a sharpened rake, but he gets a wheelbarrow. He's not going to run you over. It's it's like, ooh, Clyde, you little bitch, what you going to do, mulch me to death? You going to bury me in a pile of leaves? They were done pretty quick with their house being the subject of all of this mess. It started becoming kind of a tourist attraction. People were constantly asking them what they were experiencing. You get the picture. It is a daily annoyance. Quote, "Instead of spirits," the Cromarties complained, "they were haunted by what could only be called paranormal tourists who knocked on the door at all hours of the day and night. These people sometimes called themselves witches. Sometimes they cursed out the Cromarties and told them they would die. Sometimes they were drunk. And sometimes, as the family told Newsday in 1978, they were just odd. I think one of the funniest things was when we woke up at 3 o'clock and heard this guy with a bugle playing taps on the front lawn. I opened the window. I opened the window and applauded and said, 'Kid, you got a real good sense of humor,' said Jim." And everybody knows what taps is, right?
I hope that kid won a bet. It was worth a lot of money, because that's amazing. Starting in medieval times, wassailing became a common practice. People would go out with their giant wassail bowls, which some of them were not huge. They're kind of big goblets, I guess you could say. And then some...
What's a wassail bowl?
Yeah. And some of them...
So you weren't saying wassail bowl. You're saying wassail bowl.
Am I?
Are you?
I don't know.
What are you trying to say? Are these two separate words, wassail and bowl?
Yeah.
Oh.
I've already had too much wassail.
You're so wassable. Like it was.
It's like it's washable.
No, like it, or like it was a child's toy. Like, watch, Mom, I can convert this wassable into a chuck.
That's just that Midwestern. Let's just combine all the words.
Oh, I'm Southern. Like, I can talk, please.
I'll slow down. I'll say it again in case everybody is unclear.
Oh, this isn't being edited. They know. Now they know.
Wassable.
And the plot is not entirely accurate. They took liberties, let's say. And it's basically that the Zodiac Killer is a pissed off mail carrier who goes, ha ha ha, postal at night. Further, one of my sources describes it thus, quote, a ramshackle mix of melodramatic restaging of true events and relentless weirdness as his version of Zodiac worships Satan in the basement of his modest home while pet bunnies stare off into the middle distance. Pet bunnies stare off into the middle distance. It's the best. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out a title for this one because I got a few. There's more zingers in here. So just wait. But pet bunnies.
Oh my God. If your film doesn't have pet bunnies staring off into the middle distance, I don't want to see it.
I tell you what.
New standard.
Okay. We're now at the last night of the run. Hansen goes to take a pee break. He's at the urinal. Somebody comes in and chooses the urinal right next to him.
Rude.
It's rude. I don't know how men use urinals. I mean, I know the mechanics. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that the modesty aside, for this reason alone, trying to pee with somebody right next to you, I can't. So the other man starts talking about one of the gory scenes in the movie and comments that, quote, you know, real blood doesn't come out like that. And Hansen says, quote, I zipped up, turned, and saw the same face that was on the wanted poster. Same eyes, nose, mouth, hair, everything. I thought, son of a bitch, it's him.
Son of a bitch! Do something, man!
I'm surprised he didn't zip his wiener up. And I personally would have just been jaw-dropped.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That had to be a moment of just like, okay, be cool, be cool, be cool. Oh my God, I'm gonna die. Be cool, be cool!
Unreal.
So not only are they having trouble keeping him out of these garbage piles, but Terrar also is very hot and very sweaty and smelly. In fact, we don't even know if his actual name was Terrar or if it was a nickname because of his, quote, prodigious flatulence.
Wait, is Terrar French for fart?
Well, apparently there's a phrase that went bom bom Terrar, and it was used to describe explosions. And so it's kind of assumed that was just a nickname given his, quote, again, prodigious flatulence.
100%.
Yikes. So he's gassy. Okay, let's add that to his profile. So yeah, he's going to be smelly. But no, his musk, his scent, his natural fragrance, it's not just from gas. He literally permeated odor. He stank, and this is a quote, to such a degree that he could not be endured within the distance of 20 paces. And they said that there was a visible vapor that came off of him.
I can't imagine how he stank. I believe it. Bathing wouldn't take it all away. So yeah.
Yeah. He struggled. I don't think he ever found love.
No. No. Remember when I said that it's a good thing one end was pointed? I say that because of what happens next. Because if this had a flat end, it just may have killed him on the spot. Because it launches like it has been fired out of a cannon. This 3-foot, 7-inch long rod drills through Gage's head. The momentum this thing had was so great that it kind of took Gage with it a bit before it exited. And he's thrown backwards. He didn't lose consciousness. He twitched a couple times. Then he gets up and starts walking around and talking to people.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Now, we don't have any reports about any of the workers passing out or pissing their pants or whatever, but I'd put down a bet on at least one or two. I like those odds. Somebody finally goes, "My dude, we got to get you some help because mother bitch." And Gage proceeds to climb on an ox cart, and he's not chosen to lie down in the back. He's riding shotgun, and he's jotting down notes in his little pocket notebook that he uses for work. What? What did it say? Minor delay in excavation. Let boss know. Commission new tamping rod. Purchase hat.
Yeah, I feel like that hat might be important.
I don't mean to laugh.
Oh my God. But no, yes, this is an absurd situation.
One of my sources says that the aforementioned Dr. Harlow was summoned to the work site, unsure how long this took, but he finds Gage wide awake and friendly and chatty. Gage recognized him, and it said that he, quote, reassured the doctor.
I don't know what everybody's so worried about. Everybody's just looking at me funny. I don't know what everybody's so worried about.
What's the problem? I lost my rod. Let's just keep going.
I think it's if I pick up my rod.
And that's it. Hey, Tiff, quick, say something witty for the quote post.
Unicycle. Thanks for listening. As a reminder, you can check out our sources for each of the episodes at our blog, along with any other supplemental things we think you might enjoy. Just head over to youtotallymadethatup.tumblr.com, and in the menu, click on show notes.
We're also on Twitter at YTMTUpodcast and on Instagram at youtotallymadethatup. You can contact us at any of those places, and you can also email us. That address is youtotallymadethatup@gmail.com.
We love hearing from you, whether it's ideas for episodes, your own personal or family stories, telling us what we can do better, and telling us what we should keep on doing.
And if you're enjoying the podcast, please consider taking a moment to rate and review on your platform of choice. Or if you know someone who may like our content, send them our way.
We're so grateful for our listeners and would love to add even more people to our wild podcast family.